Aussie music is something to be proud of.
Wear it like a badge.
Because it's Australian bands and artists that are the influences of so many other musicians the world over. So at Triple M,
we're proud to be able to showcase the power of the Aussie music scene.
Paying both homage to the greats that have stood the test of time, right alongside the current, the emerging, the future influences.
The ones that will be next to make their mark on the global music scene.
If it's Aussie and it rocks, it's right here. This is Triple M's Homegrown with Matty O.
Yes, we are live on the Listener app, 49 stations right around the country on the Triple M network. It is an absolute treat to welcome one of our most favourite singer-songwriters to the show. We've seen him in pubs, clubs, heard him at birthdays. He's given us anthems across his career, whether it be with Hunters and Collectors, but an incredible solo career. Tracks we love. Westgate, of course, with The Undertow as well. And we've seen him also perform with some of our favourites. Good friend, Mr. James Rain, and of course from Mushroom. Even when I'm sleeping, but it's all about a brand new album. Incredible. Title track, The Boxer, and also...
So I'm standing on the corner in the rain, waiting on the king.
So good. An absolute pleasure to welcome the one and only Mark Seymour to the show. How are you, mate? Good to see you.
It's one of the best intros I've heard for a long time.
You are more than welcome, mate. I was just saying, we were just saying off air, like I had the pleasure of watching you do a performance at the Newmarket in St Kilda, where you got to play those songs stripped back and acoustic, and hearing those songs, you know, it's kind of like, is that the way they were kind of written, how they came to life in that scene? Because it just seems so natural hearing them played like that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've just become more adept at using my iPhone.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah,
I just pretty much record into that. I'm just sitting here on the desk.
Yeah.
And it sort of starts from there, you know. But I think in the broad, longer term, I don't really think my approach to songwriting has changed a great deal.
Yeah, that was my next question. I was going to ask, how has the process kind of changed? Or it is quite similar.
I think I think the subject matter's shifted definitely. And I've changed as I've gotten older where I've focused my attention on. But I think the approach, it's a pretty basic psychological thing, you know. You pick the guitar up and you sort of sit on the couch and lean. I mean, there's no bells and whistles attached. It's just very much if it comes quickly and it's immediate and you've got a sense of something's going on here, or there's a line there that I feel connected with somehow, and it just sort of arrives.
Awesome. You know? And it's 13 years with The Undertow now. You've been playing with them.
I'm glad you reminded me.
How does it work? Do you just kind of bring a song to them? You send them demos and then you kind of piece it together and...
Actually just compile little MP3s. I just record them on the phone.
Oh, cool.
And then I just send them off in email. And
nice.
And then we get together and they bring, you know, they'll just bring whatever into the room, you know, like.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of co-writing, not much, just there is a bit, but that door's always been open. You know, I just think that you get a reaction. And people, getting musicians to react is a really important part of it. And that's what makes a band interesting and passionate.
When did the writing for this album begin?
I wrote The Stars of Fitzroy.
I loved hearing that.
For Vicar and Linda's record.
Yeah.
So that's going back, right? A couple of years now.
Yeah.
And didn't make the cut. And then I spoke to Vicar about it a while later and she goes, we listened to 70 songs for that record. So I'm like, I wonder. I got in there late, but then they really liked that song and they said, if you'd been a bit earlier, you know. So I went, all right, I'm going to record that. And that's how it started. Yeah. I just committed to that. And I thought, And then the dean at Mushrooms came to me and said, you reckon you got a record in you?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
And I went, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And looking back at these songs, is it that kind of thing where you're writing fresh for an album, or do you kind of look back at other demos you had that might have been not suitable for what you're doing at the time, but you can revisit them for a project like this?
Oh, I know what you mean, yeah. I mean, people do that.
Yeah.
But I generally throw things away. I just go, you know, look, it's what am I facing? I mean, this is a very personal record, I should say. Mm. I mean, it's much more, I spent quite a few years looking out at the world and writing, about events and just the feeling of the city and just travel and lots of themes like that. But this one's very much about, I mean, I, I don't, it's hard to come out of lockdown and not really spend a lot of time alone in that that last few months of the pandemic, and I'm just walking along the clifftop at Mornington, and you know, it's just a very personal record. But then that said, there's a lot of characters in the record. I've spent a lot more time. I've become more interested in writing in character. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm telling the truth as it happens, but it's like trying to write from the point of view of someone else. I imagine someone else's perspective.
Mm. Yeah. Worth mentioning that we're both based here in Melbourne as well. During lockdown, it was pretty strict, pretty tight.
It was.
You know, there were times where you could only leave 5 kilometres away from the house. So how was that when kind of everything stopped for you? And, you know, musicians are so used to being away and travelling. It's a big part of your life. You've been doing it for so long. How were you being in one spot?
Well, I think it was interesting, a question, actually. My daughters, especially my younger daughter, she really struggled with it, Hannah. She ended up leaving the country. And she's still in Scotland. She went to Scotland.
Oh, right.
And she's still there. Okay. But I think she felt that she'd lost time. And I think when you're in your 20s, that's the time when you're far more engaged in everyday experience just because you're young. And I think for me, I'm a lot older, obviously. I thought, we'll get through it. I just had a basic level of confidence. But that said, I kind of went, rightio, I need to exercise. And I bought myself a really good boxing bag and hung it in the garage. And that kind of had a big impact.
Yeah. And we should talk about the song, The Boxer, and your boxing trainer as well, who is absolutely lovely. She's got her own podcast as well, Rolling with the Punches.
Yeah, that's it.
And she features in the video clip for the song as well.
That's it.
A pretty special relationship, you two.
Yeah. Well, she approached me. I'm not quite sure what order things went in, but I remember posting this vaguely humorous picture of the bag swinging back and forth, made a little movie of it. Not me, I wasn't in it, and it's in this garage, and you can see all this audio equipment in the background. And she kind of saw that and contacted my manager and said, I'd like to have Mark in to do the podcast. And and then noticed the boxing bag, went, oh, you do that. And then she boxes.
Whoa.
Like, she's a very, very good boxer.
Yeah.
And I ended up, she trains me now.
Yeah.
Which is deeply ironic. But I just wrote a story. I mean, there's a bit of poetic license in there, but I basically wrote an imagined story of her, how she arrived at that point.
Yeah.
You know, as she got into it. She did tell me a few stories about discovering boxing.
Yeah.
But I just really, and she, you know, we have these very long, deep conversations about psychology and just the idea of self-reliance and character and just stuff you kind of had to, I realized I was thinking a lot about anyway because of that time in my life, coming out of the lockdown, out of isolation.
Mm.
And the thing about boxing, I think too, is that, actually we were talking about this the other day, so much of it's to do with self-reliance. Like the idea of when you spar, you're actually, there's this person that's just coming at you. And it's kind of like this, it's like playing ping pong.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's very simple. It's one-on-one. And you kind of have to be thinking about how do you grapple with events you can't predict.
Yeah.
You know, or trying to predict. And it's a real parable about life in there. And I love that idea, you know, like that a sport can have that kind of insight.
And it's all on you. You know what I
exactly.
mean? Like you can't, no one's going to be there to help you. You're kind of put in this situation where it's everything. It's how much work you've put in to be in that exact moment. And if you don't do well, it's all on you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Are you still boxing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
I think chatting to other musicians as well, I think mental health became a big thing and maybe doing stuff and it being more at the forefront of musicians' minds. And I think having outlets like exercising and going to the gym and boxing in your case has become quite big. I feel like it was something
true.
That, you know what I mean? Like you've grown up playing gigs in the 80s and 90s and, you know, it can be a pretty rough time, you know what I mean? And that was never talked about. So I guess now in this day and age, it's nice that that's at the forefront.
So many musicians I know, they swim. Swimming's popular.
Yeah.
Golf, tennis.
Mm.
You know, find a tennis court.
Yeah.
So many people, Melbourne musicians I know, who do that.
Yeah.
You know, they find a way to get together at some form on the road.
Yeah.
You know,
it's right. It's doing that now. It's not meeting up in the pubs anymore.
Exactly.
Which
is
a good thing.
Yeah.
Talk to me about this tour that you're doing as well. What I really loved about your show at Newmarket is it gave you you were storytelling. You were telling us about the songs and things like that. And maybe at a loud gig, there's not much room to kind of do that. But at your kind of solo shows, it was nice hearing about the songs and you could talk about it. That must be a pretty fun thing to do.
Well, it's interesting. The point about playing loud music, I still actually do that with rock and roll now. I mean, even when I'll actually talk to the audience really directly about the song I'm about to play. And I never used to do that in Hunts and Collectors. Yeah. I mean, it was always very much about the energy and the power and keeping the momentum going, because those pub gigs were all about momentum, you know. And that's still important, but I think people are really reactive to that idea that you just address them directly on a personal level and go, well, you know what, this, and you don't spend too much time doing it, but I've sort of gotten used to that now, and actually puts people at ease, and then they feel like there's a way into the song, you know, and so I do that quite a bit now.
It's nice to know about the artist's headspace when they're writing a song too.
Yeah.
You know what
and
I
it's
mean?
Quite like, ironic. It's... Like sometimes people are really surprised, but you know.
Yeah.
How you got there, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This tour, you're going to like a lot of regional places as well. Like how important is it for you as a singer-songwriter to go out to the country towns and perform?
Well, I have to say, Michael, my manager, when he announced that tour to us, you know, I remember talking to Cameron, the guitar player. He was down at Newmarket. And he was going, wow, this is really long. I go, yeah, it is. And he goes, oh, can you believe it? I go, no, I can't. It's incredible. We're going everywhere. It's like, it's probably the longest tour I've ever done.
Yeah. You know? That's nice, man.
Yeah, great.
And what kind of set list? Like how much? I mean, it must be getting hard to kind of pick what to play. You've got such an extensive
good
back catalog.
Thank you very much. It is actually quite difficult. You have to kind of let things go.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm at a point now where, I mean, there's certain Hunter songs that I don't let go, but I'm very fussy about that stuff. I mean, very respectful of those songs. I mean, I really heavily interpret them.
Mm.
But they populate the show. There's about four or five of them. But the set's about 22, 23 songs.
Oh, wow. Yeah, cool.
So, and it's this album, lot of from the last album as well. And then it just reaches back to, I don't know, about 2007, I think, my solo stuff. There's not much before that.
Yeah.
And then there's some Hunters and Collectors.
It seems like watching you perform, you know, it's so much energy and you're really excited about doing it. And do you feel that way now? Like maybe because we had that 2 or 3 year period where we couldn't play?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was a real rush, you know, in the last year, like the feeling of people coming out. I remember there was a phenomenon we discovered where you'd sell tickets and you have this conversation about ticket sales and then people wouldn't turn up. Like they'd actually buy tickets. There was this weird feeling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's interim period when people were still a bit scared about getting sick.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it's just not there now.
Yeah.
But it's great that we got through. I mean, it is tough. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Like, I mean, because of the economy and the cost of living at the moment, people are, you know, I really respect the fact that people are paying money to see you, you know,
because it's
forking out.
Yeah. I had James Rain on the show not too long ago, and it's had a huge response, this certain part of the chat, and it involves when you guys played a show together with John Fogerty, right? And he told this story, and I just want to see and ask if you remember this.
Mark was sitting down, whoever else was in the room was sitting down.
This is about meeting him.
I was sitting down, but I thought the spatial relationship's all wrong. So I stood up, and then Mark, whoever else stood up, and then it was three people standing on the edge of one of these cheap, lightweight kind of armchairs. It was fine, they'd stick him in a band room. And I sat on the edge of the thing, on the arm of it, and it just collapsed.
Oh my God.
That's my John Fogerty story, and I never really. I went, oh, I'm such an idiot, and I left.
James.
Any memory of that?
Yeah, James is a very funny guy. He said to me, because I had my album with me at some whenever it was, and I went and gave it to Fogerty. I said, here, can you take my record? And I went back, and James says, you didn't do that. You didn't do that.
Yeah.
I gave him my record. He goes, you got no shame.
And then he falls off the chair. Hey, Mark, congratulations on this release. It's super exciting. I've been lucky enough to hear it. I absolutely love the tracks. And super exciting to, you know, see you go out there and perform. It's a real treat for all of us. So thanks so much for coming in and having a chat.
Huge privilege. Thank you very much for having me.